Well, we're going to begin today's sermon with a pop quiz, and I kid you not. This survey was administered by YouGov to the British population, and the question is, what do Britons associate with Easter? I'm going to share just the top five with you, and raise your hands with the response you think was number one. So, number one would be Jesus Christ. Okay. Chocolate Easter eggs. Okay, thank you, Biff. Bank holiday. Yeah. Oh, okay, you know what a bank holiday is. Good for you. I know what a bank holiday is, too. I want one of those. Hot cross buns. Okay. An Easter bunny. And then there are a whole bunch of you out there who clearly are undecided. Well, I would like to inform you that the correct answer is chocolate Easter eggs. 76-77% of the respondents chose chocolate Easter eggs when asked what they associated with Easter. Number two was the bank holiday. Yes, that's right. And that came in at about 67%. Hot cross buns, they are not a thing of the past, came in at 62%. Number four, Jesus Christ at 55%. And then the Easter bunny came in at about 48. So at least half the population knew about Jesus. Now, I'm going to leave aside any comments about the woeful state of the British population and their knowledge of Easter, because let's be honest, Americans, I suspect, would not do any better than our friends in Britain. But there is something that all of these answers have in common, and that is that they elicit joy and happiness and laughter. They make us happy, and why not? This is, after all, a season of celebration. It is a time for us to rejoice, and we should be feeling good vibes. But I'd like to suggest that there is another emotion that we might entertain at this moment. And that is, of course, fear. That's right. Cold-blooded terror. Toe-curling horror. Fear. Now, some of you might be thinking, Steve, your cold is a little bit worse than you think it is. Some of you might be thinking that perhaps, just maybe, I'm off a few months on my choice of holiday for this emotion. But I would posit to you that I am correct. Not just because I have the lectern today, but because it's in the gospel. And if you don't believe me, I would encourage you to go read Matthew again. Consider what happens when the women are coming to the tomb. Now, a little background here. Jesus has died on Friday, and it has been a nasty mess. He has been interred. He's been embalmed. He has been laid to rest in that cave. And 2 days have passed, and a rock would have been rolled in front of the entrance. There was no way the people there would have been able to actually see Jesus or to touch him. But I suspect many people here have had the experience of visiting a grave, either of a loved one or even at a historical site. And going to this place, we can feel a connection to the one who's there. That, I suspect, is what the women were looking for. Even if it wasn't direct contact, they wanted to forge some kind of contact, forge some kind of bond with Jesus. So imagine their surprise when they show up and there is an angel. Now, each of the Gospels has somebody being present at the cave when the women arrive. But it is only Matthew who states specifically that it was an angel. And this wasn't some happy little roly-poly, cutesy-wootsy little cherub. This was a full-scale, make no mistakes about it, Old Testament angel. We hear how he's white as snow and he's flashing like lightning. And this is scary stuff. This is an angel right out of the book of Daniel. And the Romans, you remember the Romans? There were guards there. They were shocked. They were stunned. They were like dead people. Now, I'd like to suggest that you and I might well have had a response similar to that of the Romans. Now, perhaps you want to disabuse me of this notion, but I'm going to suggest that nobody in this sanctuary has actually had an encounter with a real live angel. I'm not talking about a metaphorical angel. I'm talking about a real live angel. You'd be scared. You'd be stunned. You'd be shocked. You'd be overwhelmed. That's one response. But there's another response. And that is the response of the women. We hear how the angel who has rolled away the rock speaks to them. He tells them not to be afraid, which suggests that their first instinct was to be afraid. And then he goes on to tell them he knew why they had come, to find Jesus, who was risen. They didn't expect that. And that he was going to make his way to Galilee. And they should tell the disciples. The women have an interesting response. It's a combination of the world as it is and the world as it's going to be. It's a combination of fear and of great joy. Now, I thought about what example I might use to illustrate this for you. And I finally settled on winning the lottery. Now, I have a confession to make. I have been known to buy tickets. And the jackpot is in the 400 or 500 or even the occasional $1 billion. I've got to admit, I'm a sucker. I buy a ticket. And I usually have 3 or 4 days of imagining what it would be like to win the jackpot. It's a lot of fun. I get to imagine all of the things I'm going to do, the people I'm going to help, the bills I'm going to pay off, the mad fun I'm going to have. It's great. And then lottery day comes, and I lose, and I'm out of luck, and life goes on. Nothing has changed, and it's safer that way. I don't know what it's like to actually win the lottery, and I suspect most of you, if not all of you, don't know what it's like to win the lottery too. But I've seen reports, and I've actually spoken with somebody who used to work with lottery winners. This woman was an attorney in the city of Boston who worked at one of the big downtown firms, and she had just picked up over the years this interesting little niche, and that was to provide advice to lottery winners. And she said most of the people who came to see her were lost. And generally, the ones who did not listen to her made really bad mistakes. Think about it. If you all of a sudden, tomorrow, found yourself with $500 million in the bank account, would you really know what to do with it? God bless you who said yes. I will posit that you do not know what to do with the $500 million. You may think you know, but you're not dealing with the emotions of winning that money now. you're not dealing with all of the phone calls you're going to get. Who are you going to help and who is not going to get helped? Who are you going to support and who are you not going to support? What are you going to do with your money? What are you not going to do with your money? Guess what? $500 million, even $1 billion, it's a lot of money, but it is not inexhaustible. And so one of the responses that people have to winning this huge amount of money is to close in on themselves, is to shut down and just say, no, not hearing anything, not seeing anything, and just pretend it's not there. The Romans, the soldiers, are basically like that. They have just shut down. The women have to make a decision. And they're torn. Fear and great joy. Do we shut down or do we take a risk? Because those women recognize winning the lottery, and in their case, actually accepting what Jesus is doing, involves change. It involves being transformed. And that, my friends, is the biggest risk of all. What happens to the women? Well, they appear to accept the gift. They go forth. Who do they run into? Jesus! They actually run into Jesus. Can you believe that? And this isn't some ghost Jesus, some other Jesus. This is a Jesus that Matthew tells us they can touch, they can hold, they fall to his feet, they worship him. They're not afraid. Yes, Jesus says, "Do not be afraid." But only after he offers them a greeting, only after they have held on to him. They've won the lottery. Hallelujah. Now, the promise that was given on Easter 2,000 years ago is still a promise that is given today. For each person here, Jesus' resurrection is not something out in the past, but it's something that is happening right now. Each person here, all of the people here, you and me can experience God's love in Jesus Christ. And it sounds great. But if we actually accept that gift, we have to be prepared for it to make changes in our life. And they're good changes. They may be a little bit unnerving. We may be a little bit scared at first. But letting God into our lives can change everything for us. So this Easter, whether you associate chocolate Easter eggs, again, 77%, or lambs at 28%, or good God, simnel cake, 15%. That's basically the English version of fruitcake. I hope that you will have a joyous, happy, wonderful Easter, and that you will not be afraid.